It's been well publicized that there is a teacher shortage. Well, there's also a shortage of individuals from Native or tribal communities who are state-certified teachers. Enter Tetokan Sukunawat, a project through Washington State University's College of Education that helps those in tribal communities to take life experience and their already acquired indigenous knowledge systems and add to it the requisites needed to become fully certified by the state. It's an alternate path program. And with the help of two grants, Renee Holt and Francine Watson are working collaboratively with several groups, but in particular, tribal communities, to try and make a difference. Education Eclipse starts now.
Education, news, and research. These are the conversations happening inside education, athletic training, sports science, and sport management that are going to transform each. It's Education Eclipse from Washington State University.
Back here on Education Eclipse, my name is Brandon Chapman, and I'm joined by two special guests today. We usually only have one guest in studio, but now we have two. We have Francine Watson, we have Renee Holt, two College of Education extraordinaire faculty program directors of a very special project, which I think I'm doing better at saying. Tetokan Sukunawat? Is that pretty good?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's an incredible project, first of all. And I've been able to see this from the ground floor as you were even conceptualizing this and doing grant paperwork, and you have received a grant for this. So give us the 30,000, two grants for this. Give us the 30,000 foot overview first on what the project is, and then we'll talk about, you know, why there was a need and so on and so forth. But just give the overview first, the executive summary.
The executive summary. So in thinking back, the work that we have been recently funded by in the last couple of years, actually last year and a half, actually began about 5 years ago. And so when you mentioned that, you know, from the ground up, we literally just decided that there is another side to teacher prep that wasn't being heard and included. And when we, you know, looked at what was needed, that's where, you know, I think we began. It really started with this question of what else can we do, and why are, you know, our teachers still coming in with this lack of information and knowledge about Indigenous people. And, you know, during that time span of the last five plus years, because I've been here at the university for the last 9 years and I completed my program here. But in that process, just looking at what Indigenous education needs were here within our region, in the southeastern Washington, in the traditional territories of the Nez Perce, which I'm a tribal member of, I really started looking into what was needed for our local Native Nez Perce teachers in particular. And that's how the discussion began. What are some things that we can do? And then talking with tribal community members from our education department and also our language program, because I had an internship with the Nez Perce Tribal Language Program, and there was a need there. And that's actually when this work began, essentially. And, you know, the funding that we received, two streams of funding, one from the U.S. Department of Ed's Office of Indian Education and the other Washington State's Professional Education Standards Board. The two really helped us define a little bit more of an area in Native education or said Indigenous education. And I think that, you know, it's allowed us to grow what we've been talking about. You know, I'd just ask Fran if she'd like to share a little bit more of her thoughts, too.
Well, we saw very few Native teachers going into a certification program. You know, we looked at statewide data, national data, and for our first grant that Renee led with also our colleagues, Dr. Susan Banks, we really saw this not only current data of how few Native teachers are certified with a state teaching certificate, but that the number projections would be going down because many of our, you know, there were very few in the younger years. So,
in general, I mean, we've had a teaching shortage, and of course the numbers, it's always hard to determine what that total is, but we've heard upwards of 7,000, 7,200 just in our state alone, but it's a national problem.
But if I understand Renee correctly, she's also saying that even those teachers that we do have weren't necessarily trained or understood the best way to teach Native issues.
For everyone, you know, I think if I could go and look quickly as a colleague, a learner, really trying to ask different kinds of questions, you know, our first work together was professional development, and that was for in-service teachers, and we did some pre-service teacher preparation. But as we reached out to community and we saw the strength of programming happening there, I think the core question is, you know, could we partner differently? And that, you know, partnering with language departments, partnering with tribal ed departments, partnering with schools, serving Native youth. And I think that, I don't know, Renee could kind of say if that captures it, but that core question is, what are the different kinds of partnerships that we could steward from the university? And that has been probably what brought forth our second grant, the Professional Educator Standards Board grant of the Grow Your Own that Renee referred to.
Obviously, anytime a project needs this kind of money and this kind of support, there has to be a lot of collaboration. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what was that process in terms of who within the internal WSU system had to say, yes, this is a stamp of approval, you know, do this, you know, this is important?
Well, that is it's a very good question.
It's a big institution.
It is a big institution. And actually, you know, one of the things that I found really important to highlight about that particular question is we do have, we received a substantial or significant support from the provost, and that our students in the first 10 students, they do have a tuition waiver, and which is a significant cost. And members of federally recognized tribes, in particular our MOU tribes, were, you know, targeted for a recruitment and outreach, you know, working in with the local tribal communities. We have since, we have three in particular tribal partnerships, and being in relationship with tribes requires a significant, it's a significant process. It takes time. Because as you may know, you know, in research, the Native communities are often informed rather than included as participants in research projects. And I think that's a very unique subset of the work that I really wanted to make sure was clear, because I didn't want to approach it that way. And mm-hmm. I'm a member of my own tribe, and I'm still accountable to that same measure. So, you know, seeking who I had the first relationship established with was with the tribal language program. But I was referred to work with the tribal education department, and then thereafter tribal council, because they wanted to make sure everyone was in communication and that no one was duplicating work, but also just keeping in mind the outcome of the grant was to identify Nez Perce tribal members as well. And so seeking, you know, partnerships with the Spokane tribe and also the Kalispell tribe, you know, coming from a tribal community, I think the authentic piece and the genuine effort, you know, comes from having relationships established with them prior. More in particular with Kalispell and Nez Perce, because I was on a project with Dr. Brian McNeil and Dr. Lolly McCubbin, who's former faculty here. But and I think she's now at Louisville. But really thinking about, you know, who are the individuals from the Kalispell community and, you know, what their needs were, and basically asking them, what do you need? Mm-hmm. It's a very specific and defined relationship that they have set the terms and understandings of based on their needs. Mm-hmm. And the needs right now is these reservation schools that have public schools on their reservation, basically, essentially. Public schools on tribal reservations lack Native teachers. And I mean, there's a national Native teacher shortage, and we also have one here in Washington State. But think about on tribal reservation communities, Right. And the sense has been that it's time that we have our own teachers mm-hmm. who not only speak our language, but understand the rubrics of the standard system. Well, it's not created for them. And so that's where we can come in and help work with them on meeting standards, but also equating, a lot of their lived experience to what the outcomes of a standards pace would require.
So in terms of collaboration, I mean, it seems like there would need to be a fairly decent negotiation to reconcile the standards that might be required by the state versus the needs of the community. I mean, how have we been able to work through those issues to reconcile the needs versus the demands?
In looking at what PESB, the Professional Educator Standards, if you know teacher education, especially now having to do with including EdTPA, like going through all of these reviews, mm-hmm. it's extensive. Mm-hmm. It's extensive and it's a lengthy, time, rigorous program to go through a teacher prep at any university, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we're offering, in addition to the lived experience of the work these individuals are doing, is acknowledging and working with tribal communities who know best how to help their community. So who is a university program to say this is what you need? And with the recent mandate of the House Bill 5433, which mandates that since time immemorial in the classroom, you have a significant public school system that has not implemented STI yet. And so I think our teachers being able to read the language through that, and then also they're negotiating it based on their language practices and their language needs. And that's pretty, that's actually something that I'm not even familiar with, but we have individuals here who do transcripts evaluations and working with the State Standards Board. Fran can share, mm-hmm. you know, we have a member here, our staff, Stacy, who is probably going to do a quite lengthy, extensive review on some of the things that our teachers have to go through as well. And we haven't reached that stage yet.
Well, I think, if I could add, I think that's the work itself right now. It isn't something, you know, perhaps there will be a time when we have gotten through that, a true, kind of a, I like to say that I believe that communities are reclaiming the right to educate their youth, right? And we have, nationally, internationally, we're going through these roughly one-size-fits-all models. And we can see, the research even says, they don't work. And so I think what this happens to bring forth are just new questions. They're old questions. But myself, we joke a lot. I was certified 20 years ago. I felt like I had a great preparation, but I represent the status quo teaching force, right? White, female, middle class. And so what happens is just also this very important personal and intellectual challenge of really opening the space and being in a whole different place to ask new questions about what are we doing? And we also see a lot of teaching communities say, with the hyper fixation on standardized testing and these kind of quantitative measures of how our children are doing, we have then even triple fold, boxed what teachers can do, want to do. So I think what we're trying to do is really be in the place of team building, listening. And what I was going to say with that is, my certification 20 years ago, really, we haven't changed much in teacher preparation. And perhaps as the field works to professionalize, we've missed opportunities to deepen. Mm. And so that's what I think our work is and what this project brings about with students, because they are language teachers. These are not your typical kind of what you imagine, very little professional or lived experience or younger. These are second or third career. They're language teachers. They have been teachers for years, and mm-hmm. that is their first and foremost commitment. And so just design-wise, we missed the mark. Our first grant, we designed it for a traditional residency-based program that they would come here and we would use staff resources for support and mentoring and advisement. And what we realized is that we designed it wrong, because these individuals were not going to leave their communities teaching language, working in various other education capacities. So that's
where our second grant, the Grow Your Own alternative route, really supported us in being able to redesign the preparation pathway.
It seems like alternate route is a trending, I guess. I mean, alternate route seems to be something that a lot of folks are doing because we have come to the recognition that people have significant lived experiences. Tell me about that, the class right now that you have, because my perception is that they have a lot of experience and they could have a dramatic and positive impact mm-hmm. on the traditional pre-service teachers.
Mm-hmm. We really are developing coursework for this cohort that is not at this point wholly integrated with the current preparation pathway that we offer. I think in the near future we'll have these opportunities for a symposium like you suggested, Renee, you know, things, opportunities for there to be deeper dialogue. But right now I'm being challenged just rethinking social studies methods, right? What does that look like? Renee is a partner in leading the Native education, and I think about it maybe from the standards point of view, and then we work in that partnership.
So how many individuals do we have from the various communities that are a part of this? And I think you said cohort, not cohort.
Yeah.
So explain the cohort. How many individuals do we have? And maybe just tell me about a couple of them.
Well, cohort originated from a former, I have a relative who's no longer here, who's passed on. And he was a part of the first, and actually I think it was the only Nez Perce PhD cohort at University of Idaho. And so they were the first and only. I mean, there haven't been any subsequent since PhD, or they received their EDDs, I believe. But there is a doctoral in education program at the University of Idaho. That's where that comes from. But the idea behind, you know, the cohort itself blends a traditional here in the on the Columbia Plateau region, we often are told to speak, act, and move when you're doing things with heart, with one heart, right? You do things together collectively. And I introduced that to the cohort members last summer when we had our first Indigenous summer intensive, which was a week long on campus, on site professional development. So every day, you know, we had activities from, you know, we did morning till evening in some cases, but we really, you know, looked at what does it mean to be a collective group of individuals working in Native education? Where you generally speaking, but at the time it was a question I posed to each of the teacher candidates. And so we have individuals from Spokane, from the Wahpeton Tribal Reservation or tribal community, and Kalispell, but also Nez Perce. And we have two other candidates, one from the Crow Nation and the other from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And I think this varied life experience, not only from community, but also their professional careers, they all bring something to the table, and that's they are what the University of PWI would classify as non-traditional student. So they're, you know, they have families, they're what some might consider call a mid-career, you know, they're doing something and changing. But in our Indigenous communities, we fall in a different time is spatial. So whenever something happens, it happens in a certain manner or way. And I think we have this concept of time, but it's based on heart talk as well. And when it's meant to be, it'll happen. Some call it Indian time. There are different ways to look at it, but that's just one way that we connected and talked of where they come from in their home communities. And so really looking at how each of these students, teacher candidates, were non-traditional and what they were bringing to the table in the classrooms. Some of them had to take some prereq classes as well. Mm-hmm. They were, I mean, if you have a 35-year-old Native student who's been working for the last 15 years of their life in as a para educator or classroom teacher assistant. They have children. And then you're sitting in a classroom with quote unquote traditional PWI students that are, you know, white, female, under 24, right? No, had never had their first job teaching. Mm-hmm. That was really a disservice to our students. And thankfully, it was just prereq, you know, taking care of some of the prereqs they needed. But that was really where the call came from, is our students would come back from class and say, I can't relate, and I felt so awkward to bring up my experience or to talk about what I knew because, again, some were as old as, you know, one was just 19, and this lady, you know, she was just like, oh, my gosh, that was like talking to my niece, you know, who's my oldest sister's daughter and was the firstborn in our family, and how hard that was, and I thought, gosh, what can we do? And that's actually how our focus really, we hunkered down even further because we initially had students in classes with the other students in our traditional, quote-unquote, program, but talking with our department chair, we had to do something else. Mm-hmm. And that's where this Grow Your Own piece came in. And fortunately, it was a grant that we could actually say, we have an outcome that will definitely match mm-hmm. this. And it fits into this of the two. I think there's three routes, right? And of the two, we could definitely, you know, our students could meet that. But that's how it was enhanced even more. Because initially it was just, let's get our students here. We'll get them into the WSU programs. But after the first semester, and definitely by the second semester, our students were like, I would much rather just stay with the group. And so that's how this semester morphed into what it is we have, there are closed classes. It is specifically for our teacher candidates. And there are some who are taking other classes because they have an interest. They want to learn and also grow their own, you know, and enhance their own teaching capabilities and skill set. And so we're that's a part of their ability to, I think, decide for themselves as well, because this is a student-led project in a big way, looking at what their needs are. It was actually the tribal community's call saying, look, this is what our teachers need. Here are a couple of individuals that we think would be great for the project. And then the response came from them. But specifically for Native teacher educators, this is different in that, again, you know, I think many Native teachers out there can attest to this, unless they are from a tribal community where there's a tribal college that offers a Native teacher education program. Mm-hmm. Those are mostly where there's a predominant tribal reservation population, whereas, you know, here in the southeastern pocket, you know, it's not as big as, say, the Southwest or on the Plains or even in the Midwest where you have larger populations of Native people together. Yeah, really thinking about what our teachers' needs were is how the question, what do we do and how do we make this, you know, a program for them?
Yeah, I mean, even though, yes, they have these experiences that they're gaining here, they, mm-hmm. they do come with this, you know, lived experience mm-hmm. already. And so explain this. What I've heard is Indigenous ways of knowing. They bring to the table Indigenous ways of knowing, and of course, they then gain whatever capacity we give them additionally so that they can become certified teachers or whatever. Explain what Indigenous ways of knowing is, and I guess how that differs from our educational setup that we have.
Well, that's a good question because it's simple yet also not when it comes to Western systems of education, in that while you can have a subject, a class subject, within there are different tenets and subject matter. And I think to really narrow it down, the need for creating something that included Indigenous ways of knowing required us to step out of that Western box.
Sure.
Because the teacher prep program it follows a very stringent and rigorous block, right? You have your first block, second block, third block, and within that you have these requirements in which Fran shared earlier, some of these classes she took 20 years ago when she was getting certified. And it's still that same status quo, right? Well, Indigenous learning, again, as I mentioned, much like time, is also spatial learning. So being out on the land is a big component to what Indigenous understandings of lifeway, philosophy, culture, it involves language, right? And these are things that aren't taught here at a university, in a university classroom. And so the unique part about what we're doing is each of these individuals brings a piece of that from their home community to our classroom. Mm-hmm. And our classroom isn't in a traditional classroom sense. This is where that alternative comes in. And we do some AMS, we do Zoom, we do emails, we do Blackboard. The students have a Facebook group in which they provide a support to one another. They also text, do person interpersonal communication. They work together, helping each other. But I think really talking about what it means to be a cohort, it's not only speaking from the heart and working from the heart, but it's also using heart knowledge. Like, you can't teach heart, right? That's something that an individual brings with them from whatever community they're coming from. And their variances and differences, the way Nez Perce and Spokane people will participate in certain cultural activities or even culturally, we may look the same, but there's different styles of the way we approach, say, our roots, our berries. That's Indigenous ways of knowing. That's ancestral teachings that won't be found in a book. And those are the types of things that our students share with one another. For example, one of our students is a gatherer up from the Wahlpenet area. And she's going to begin gathering soon. And so a lot of her time will be split between getting out as soon as this, you know, she can get out of her work office out onto the land before the sun sets. There are reasons why. There are certain locations that she's got to go to that aren't just immediately nearby her. So getting out there and talking about her traditional family gathering spots and moving with the land, those are types of things that you won't read about in a book. Agriculturally speaking, you know, farming is here, right? It's in this area, but the approach to land-related knowledge also involves language. And so the language piece is something that I've told the students as well, that we don't speak their language. And so they're our teachers. And so if there's a teaching lesson or a plan or even some type of instruction that they have that's using their language, we become the students. You know, as the project directors and instructors or faculty on the project, we have this space where someone, our junior, right, maybe 10 years, even a greater, you know, they could even be 15 years. I think our youngest student on the project is also a teacher, right? Teaching us about things that she's learned from her family. And that's essentially what Indigenous ways of knowing is. Not to just completely ignore the fact that it's thousands of years old of ancestral knowledge passed down from one family to the next, but it involves, you know, ceremony for some of the students. Some students participate in ceremony, so, you know, acknowledging that. And then also respecting their right to not share that. That is something that is also sacred. But also including culture of relationship building, or even being in relationship, accountability, clanship, bands. There's many ways to look at it, but Indigenous ways of knowing is a large way of saying each tribal nation has their own way of in language, in ceremony, and in culture.
How many people do we have this year in the cohort, and what is the capacity to grow? So what can we grow to? And is it, would it just be an issue of funding? Or, you know, what would we need to keep this moving forward?
I'll tag team, but right now we have 8 teacher candidates and we have 3 principal candidates, which is, they are a part of the Indigenous Ed Seminar, even though their program is distinct from the teacher candidates. And so with our second grant, we have funding support for up to 15 students. And I think that we're assessing right now our capacity to take additional students, even though there may not be direct funding support for them right now. You know, the capacity question is probably a very dynamic one, because right now it's 3 of us, as we shared with Susan Banks, and our department chair. I want to give some accolades there, because he's been a very big supporter of this work over the last couple of years and really helping us think about innovation. So,
and we're talking about Department Chair Tarek Akmal.
Yes,
in this
thank
case.
You. Yeah. So, I'll answer it in this way, and then, you know, pass the baton to Renee. I think our capacity is very much driven by the community request. It is a funding issue. If we could hire more people to help us with the multiple layers of this work, then I think we could grow a little bit more. But there's also something to be said that bigger is not always better. And so really making sure to stay steady and committed to the core purpose rather than, you know, growing too fast. You know, that can be difficult, because you lose sometimes relationship building, and that's probably the foundation of this work. So.
No, you can be smaller and strong. It's like you're like the Gonzaga basketball of programs.
Gonzaga made it to Sweet 16.
Again, yes, indeed.
They make it.
You know, it's exactly right. It is very, very specific. It's very focused. It's a small and strong project thus far, and I think we feel absolutely like it'll continue to be that way, given, you know, the heart and soul we've given it so far.
Let's say that we do have a teacher, a pre-service teacher, who is a traditional student. They're here doing block 1, block 2, block 3, and they may identify themselves as an ally of this. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean to be an ally?
Well, we do actually have a couple of individuals who have expressed an interest that aren't Native, and they work in a Native community at a predominantly Native public school where there's predominantly Native students. So these individuals are looking for ways to, they're looking for professional development. Mm-hmm. And in the process, they're basically saying, I am interested in becoming a teacher, without even realizing it, that's something they're doing. And so technically, we are in that regard, that the project is involving, there are allied individuals, and they're allied with and in relationship with tribal community members of the project. And so, in essence, these particular individuals who are in the current project already are the ones promoting the work to them and saying, if you're interested in continuing to work in our community, hey, look, here's a project that you might be interested in. They're looking for and seeking candidates. We're really... we're a conduit for that. Like, it opened, and it was a segue for them to have the conversation. And I think that's essentially what is leading how allied individuals can become involved. There isn't a said or a specific call that says you need to be an ally to work on this. But there are individuals who already know that they're doing just that, and yet they don't self-identify as an ally. Some of them are even speaking the language of the local tribal community. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty awesome, right? That's the tribal community's willingness to also support these individuals who are helping, in essence, their tribal community children.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that as an ally myself, and being along this path of learning how to be an ally, because even 5 years ago, I would have said, I'm an ally, right? But that means something very different today than it did 5 years ago in our collaborative work. And I think for someone who perhaps is just starting out, let's say, in a commitment to allyship, I think listening is the first thing. You know, mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people who want to help and do the right thing and jump in there, and that would have been me in many ways several years ago, right, to be a little dramatic. But it really is important to step back and back and back and quiet and truly listen and be a learner.
Mm-hmm.
Because day after day, week after week, blind spots have been revealed to me, assumptions, things that in terms of critical allyship have been very hard on a personal level to wrestle with, to talk about. Mm-hmm. Renee and I's relationship we have a professional collegial relationship, but also a very personal one in that this is hard work. It doesn't click on and off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that I would say truth is the first self-reflection. Like, am I really in that place, or do I just kind of want to know what to do so I do everything right? Like, that's a very different intention.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I can identify with that.
Yeah.
Actually. So I'll point out that as this podcast is released, more information about this program, about the students even in the program, can be found right on the front of our college website. But eventually, that will probably come off of that main part. But it will always be, there will always be a link on the front under our Explore section of the website for this project.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go through, you will be able to see each of the individuals who plays a part in the cohort. You'll be able to see videos that they have, been able to do, where they talk about their experiences, they talk about their hopes and sometimes their fears, and it's pretty cool stuff. So we're going to keep doing that. And then one of the things that I'm excited about is we will give a space through Education Eclipse to these individuals to do their own podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And so those, we will absolutely put those on the website, but we'll also have those hosted through Education Eclipse.
Cool. Yeah.
Which means that they're going to be out there on iTunes and mm-hmm. Stitcher Radio and all of that as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Any last words?
Well, I think in relation to the podcast, just, you know, thinking about the total number of students overall, there'll be 15, and we currently have 9. And each of them has a story to tell, but we've been talking about what questions that they would like to answer, and really sharing their life and lived experience as educators, or future teacher educators, like future native teacher educators. And I think, promoting them is really important, because their work is what is leading this project. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're guiding it, but again, and then of course we have administrative support, but the students are the ones who are guiding this need.
And they're the Totokensukenawit rock stars, you're the facilitators.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably talk more. Our first Totokensukenawit episode, we'll talk about the name Totokensukenawit. It'll talk about some of the language that we're using, but it'll be indigenous, you know, by indigenous, for indigenous. And each of the students have an experience they'd like to share, and I think that's exciting, because we live in that age of technology, and hey, podcasting is the thing, right? We're getting our word out. We're doing our thing, and in our tribal communities, and technology is what's helping us mm-hmm. glue the pieces together. Whereas, 20 years ago, there's still the World Wide Web, of the internet, right?
Netscape.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And then came Internet Explorer, and so kind of aging myself here, but really thinking about how this has been an evolution. And that word traditional teacher prep program has been, we're creating something that's an alternative, and it's alternative in the sense that we're going in another direction that's not been done before here in this, on the Edward University, here on a campus.
I think this is awesome work that you're doing. You brought up the technology, so let me just ask, do you still have nightmares of the sound of dial-up internet in your head? You can hear
whenever I hear it. Whenever I hear it, I immediately I'm like, oh wow, that's old.
And the kids today, they don't even understand.
Yeah, their biggest fear is Rory calls it the spinning wheel of death.
Oh yeah, that's and it only lasts for a few seconds.
Yeah, he was on my Mac and he opened up an old PC laptop. He's like, I actually prefer that spinning wheel of death to the, I think he's been so scarred by the frozen screen.
You had to tell him about the AOL discs that we used to have to put
in. Well, my old laptop has a pop out disk drive. He's like, look at how old this is. Look at this, and he pops it out. He's like,
it's a cup holder.
It's just a disk drive. He goes, no, but you just slide it in. There's no pop-out tray. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like that's the date mark right yep. there. That's only 5 years old.
I know.
All right, thank you, Brandon.
Fran, Renee, thank you so much. I'm already excited about what you have helped facilitate. And I'm really looking forward to where we go from here. Mm-hmm. But it does come down to the students. I'm looking forward to hearing more of their stories. I think it's awesome.
It's great.
I'm looking forward to them being able to go back to their communities with even more teaching capacity, mm-hmm. with a teaching certificate in hand,
yes.
And be able to make a huge difference in their community. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
thank you so much. Thank I appreciate
you.
This.
Thank awesome. You for having us. Katiao yo.
You've been listening to Education Eclipse, a College of Education podcast from Washington State University.